there's no way of knowing where this pandemic is going. And what I think we've concluded is that we simply can't run from it. Our model was designed for this. Our model was designed to protect us and our players from the cases in the outside community. Maybe at the time we designed it, we didn't think it would be as necessary as it is now, but at least we're preparing for it.
That was NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, doing his very best to project confidence while also acknowledging uncertainty about the league's plan to restart the season in Florida. Today, as we count down the weeks until play is scheduled to resume, ESPN's Pablo Torre is here to assess how strong Silver's plan really is as coronavirus cases are rising, whether the players are ready for the game and for extended isolation, and which teams are primed to succeed. I'm Ina Kimes. It's Thursday, July 2nd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. So, Pablo, I am having you on today to talk about the NBA because you are an experienced NBA reporter, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the impending season, but also because of impending changes on this very podcast, which, cue dramatic music, we will announce at the end.
Doo-doo-doo!
Well, now they're definitely going to hang around to the end because you queued that up just so dramatically. But before we get to that, and before we get to the actual basketball, which I'm excited to talk to you about, I want to discuss everything that is happening before the games will be played. First things first, at this point, we have a good idea of what each team's roster is going to look like. Some players have opted out, but no huge stars are skipping this season. Pablo, did anything surprise you about the way these rosters shaped up?
Yeah, with all due respect to Wizards sharpshooter Davis Bertans, I kind of want to focus on the Nets because there are some useful NBA players who are sitting out, but the Nets are dealing with, and pardon the double entendre here, they're dealing with an epidemic of guys sitting out for all sorts of reasons. There are shoulder injuries, there are coronavirus positive tests, and so Wilson Chandler is sitting out because he has family concerns. DeAndre Jordan tested positive. Spencer Dinwiddie tested positive, but he is on the fence right now about whether to go into Orlando. And obviously Kyrie Irving, who had a shoulder injury that predates all of this, the biggest star on the team, had been urging his teammates to sit out this restart because of concerns about distracting from activism and distracting from the racial conversation that has overtaken America. But what's fascinating, Mina, is that the Nets who are sitting out, those names which comprise so much of the starting rotation, they're not saying activism is the reason they're sitting out. Kyrie Irving has been a Pied Piper of sorts, an organizer. But imagine a world where the NBA was dealing with all of these Brooklyn Nets sitting out, and they're doing it for the express reason of this protest movement. The NBA is going to face so many complications, but the fact that they're avoiding this one seems super interesting to me.
Right. For all the talk we had about Kyrie Irving and the infamous call in which he suggested players skip the season, to focus on these social justice movements, it didn't really matriculate. Now, the players did apply some pressure to the league, Pablo, and the NBA announced some measures they're taking to show support for the equality movement and protests and to allow players to do the same. For example, the words Black Lives Matter are going to be painted on the courts. There's going to be ongoing discussions between the league and the Players Association about allowing personalized messages in place of players' last names on the backs of jerseys. Now, it has been reported that the players did decide not to use the names of those who died in police custody. Do you think those measures helped alleviate concerns amongst some players about the possibility that the games would steal the spotlight from the protests?
I think they're gestures made in good faith. And by good faith, I mean the NBA is trying to make very clear to not just the players, but the public, we are on your side. And the NBA has been very good about that for a really long time. But just imagine any company willingly stepping into the job of content moderation right now. I mean, that's what's happening when it comes to the slogan on the jersey question in specific. One question, one constitutional question is like, what happens if an NBA player wants to put Free Hong Kong on the back of his jersey? That was a 9-figure controversy that cost the NBA so much money when Daryl Morey, the Rockets GM, tweeted and deleted that phrase. And so if an NBA player does that, that seems like an entire disaster waiting to happen. What if someone puts defund the police on their jersey while their bubble is being guarded by police? Ja Morant, the Grizzlies young star, said on Instagram that he wanted to put on his jersey 12. 12 meaning police in this case, before deleting that and then clarifying his intent. So I don't know if the NBA wants to wade into yet another massive global free speech issue because they want to make a show of good faith.
You know, in other leagues, there's a lot of discussion right now about whether players, coaches, GMs will be kneeling for during the national anthem, you know, as Colin Kaepernick started years ago. Now, that's an interesting question in the NBA because it's actually not allowed, but it never became an issue. Do you see players kneeling in the bubble?
Well, this week, Adam Silver actually told Time Magazine that, quote, "I'm not comfortable with the word allow when it comes to the question of whether players will be allowed to kneel during the anthem."
I'm not comfortable with the word allow. We've had a rule on our books that calls for players to stand in a line at attention during the national anthem. I also understand the role of protest, and I think that we'll deal with that situation when it presents itself.
Look, all of these players, or at least an overwhelming majority of them, are definitely going to kneel. But it is a fascinating situation for the NBA.
So in the end, Pablo, as you've described, the players who did opt out didn't do so for issues pertaining to the movement for racial equality in America, mostly for health and safety reasons. And even though we are calling this, it's not a bubble, it's a clean site, that's the phrase now, there are still many, many questions about how clean it's going to be. And I'm talking, of course, about the arenas and hotels on the grounds of the Walt Disney Resort. Full disclosure, ESPN is owned by the Walt Disney Company. Now, the biggest issue, I think, with this clean site is that it is in Orange County, Florida, which is bright red on any map of coronavirus hotspots in the United States. What do we know about what the league is doing to keep players, coaches, workers safe when they are surrounded, Pablo, by one of the most concerning outbreaks in America?
We know that they didn't plan this all out, this clean site. They didn't plan it out when Florida was spiking. But how permeable is the bubble going to be is the question. And so there are all of these cleaning protocols, all of these staffing strategies around floor-by-floor cleaning crews. People will not be able to enter 6 feet of NBA players. No licking hands on the court. You got to wash the basketballs. You can only play singles ping pong, which I'm sure is a tragedy for so many of the NBA players inside the bubble. Right now, this is about health and safety. But imagine a world where the NBA has to punish these guys for walking around outside. For, I don't know, not playing singles ping pong, for having tips reported on them by their colleagues or staff on the hotline that the NBA is establishing for misbehavior. Nobody wants to punish any of this behavior. This becomes a political question in terms of labor and management reaching a sort of understanding and a consensus, even more than a scientific one, I think.
And I think the problem is it's not just about, you know, labor, in this case, the players and management, the league. It's about everyone else, as you said, who's going to be on the clean site.
Yes.
The Disney employees who are working in hotels and operating facilities, but not living there. They'll be living in their homes outside the resort grounds in that hotspot, which, you know, it's not just about them exposing the players potentially, Pablo. It's about the players potentially exposing them. I mean, what is the feeling around the league about how truly safe it's all going to be?
The bubble's permeability is jeopardized also by all of the actual workers who are not making all of this money and don't get paid the attention and are battling within their unions to protect themselves. I don't know how safe you can be if your bubble experience as an employee involves none of the protections that these NBA players are getting.
Well, someone's going to test positive at some point, likely multiple people once they get there. And it's an open question, I think, where the line is for Adam Silver to stop the season. Our friend Brian Windhorst used the phrase too big to fail to describe the situation. Do you see it that way? I mean, how much pressure is there right now on the league to keep this thing going, even in the face of positive tests?
I know it's going to cost millions of dollars every day to run this bubble. And so there is a cost in merely operating this. But the financial incentives here are so obvious to me. I can imagine a world where a dozen NBA players test positive inside the bubble and they don't stop at all. Adam Silver has already primed the pump for that. He's already said multiple players are not going to cause the shutdown of this league. But imagine if it's the biggest star. If the playoff picture is changed by LeBron, for instance, or Giannis, or James Harden, or Kawhi Leonard testing positive in ways that create massive news, you can do all sorts of rigorous scientific protocols, but you're still kind of painting a tunnel on the side of a mountain and pretending that you can pass through it. You're not going to escape from this unscathed. And so again, what's your risk tolerance? The NBA is telling us already, our risk tolerance is a lot higher than it used to be, and it's a lot higher than what you might think.
All right, after the break, let's talk about what happens if they get through that mountain and basketball is actually played.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Pablo, if the season begins, caveat we're going to use until that very first tip-off happens, on the first night, we see the Jazz and Pelicans square off, followed by the Battle of Los Angeles in Orlando, as the Clippers and Lakers go at it. I want to talk to you about the Lakers because they are the number one seed in the West at the moment, but with Avery Bradley opting out, they are also number one in meme potential thanks to the return of one J.R. Smith. Are you concerned, intrigued, both at the same time?
All of those things. I could not be more excited. And I want to be clear about something because I was pretty pessimistic in our last segment about the viability of all of this. And I have various concerns, but as a fan of basketball, if we get to this point, the Los Angeles Lakers are absolutely going to be the must-watch team in all of sports because LeBron James has this thing where he loves screwballs. He loves guys who have a history of messing up and doing clownish things on the biggest stages.
I can relate.
Hill misses. Rebound goes to the Cavs. J.R. Smith brings it back out. Throws it to Hill. Hill shot blocked. And we'll go to overtime. I get the feeling J.R. Smith thought they had the lead.
Didn't know the score.
I think exactly. That's a bad mistake by J.R. Smith.
Mina, I mean, much like your career, LeBron has found that there is a market inefficiency when it comes to memes. There is a real value in the entertainment of these guys. And to be clear, LeBron thinks that this is the best team available. Clearly, he didn't have to sign J.R. Smith after he forgot the score and the time of an NBA Finals game. He didn't have to do that. But the fact is that he did. And he does this all the time. LeBron signs Michael Beasley as per last year. LeBron signs Lance Stevenson as he did last year. He'll have JaVale McGee. He'll have all of these guys around him. That's his type. That's the kind of player that he likes. He is de facto the GM and the CEO of Los Angeles Lakers. But these are the guys he wants to hire. So yes, they're the number one seed, not only in terms of basketball ability, but also in terms of potential humiliation. And there is no better combination than that.
What about the other matchup? Why do you think the NBA decided to open with New Orleans and Utah, which of course are not particularly large markets?
With all due respect to the half Filipino Jordan Clarkson of the Utah Jazz, the Jazz and Utah are not anywhere in the equation the NBA made to get this as their first game. And it's because Zion is on the other side. Mina, when we were looking at the playoff picture, it became so clear that this was gerrymandered to get Zion Williamson into the restart. And the reasons are obvious. Not only is Zion the presumptive rookie of the year, not only is he a player unlike pretty much any young player in recent memory in terms of body type and performance, but he is a draw.
Zion leaping, grabbing, and slamming.
Zion for four for four. Welcome to the NBA.
He is enormous business. At ESPN, we know this acutely. The ratings surge when he's on the court. So the Pelicans, starting with them and with Zion Williamson, I would say I'm surprised, but I think we all expected something like this to happen.
You mentioned Zion Williamson's body type, and I'm going to shamelessly use that as a segue to talk about another thick with multiple C's NBA stars. Well, he used to be thick, but Denver's Nikola Jokic appears, Pablo, to have lost a lot of weight. Now, the Nuggets are already a fascinating team, given that their best player is, you know, a center, which is, of course, rare in today's NBA. How do you think his transformation affects him on the court?
Well, first off, I'm just disappointed. I'm disappointed. I want our athletes to be as thick as they want to be. I am a big champion of body positivity in all its shapes and sizes. And Jokic right now, I mean, the photos are wild. To me, I think this is probably good news in the sense that the wear and tear of the body is not going to be as heavy. His conditioning, which was a problem back when the real regular season had started, is not going to be as much of an issue theoretically. There was this assumption that this was the only thing holding him back, his health and his weight. But to be honest, if I'm working for the Nuggets, I'm kind of scared. He was an MVP candidate in the form that he was before.
Jokic falling away. Good! Jokic has it, the running one-hander. Yes! Did it, did it!
Now he weirdly looks like a bizarro Kristaps Porzingis. And all you got to do is remember that Kristaps Porzingis, while very skinny, is also deeply injury-plagued. So I think it's a net negative, even though some people will argue that it's good that he did this.
If the playoffs started right now without the, you know, 8-game regular season, the aforementioned Nuggets would be playing the Rockets, who, Pablo, I find to be maybe the most fascinating team in the NBA. It feels like this might be the last time we see this roster, coach and GM, all together. You have written about this team and James Harden. How do you see this playing out for them?
James Harden is continually, to me, the most intriguing single character when it comes to any playoffs. Because number one, he is a guy who has, and I don't use this word lightly because it seems to be an indictment and also a psychological evaluation, but he chokes. He, at the very least, is nowhere near as good as he tends to be in the regular season when it comes to the postseason. Now, some claim that that's because he likes to party too much. But more than that, this is a team that has been historically plagued by the postseason. What might be a reprieve for this team is that this season does feel so unlike any other that maybe, just maybe, all of this rest was exactly what James Harden needed. And maybe the small ball approach they took again a million years ago when they were playing regular season basketball. Maybe that continues to work.
So Pablo, about those NBA stars who don't have basketball hoops at their homes, which is, I think, really shocking. One of them was Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think he rectified that. But at the beginning of the quarantine, he did not have a hoop. Now, his team, the Milwaukee Bucks, were the prohibitive favorite to come out of the East before all of this started. Do you think that's still the case?
No, I don't. And that's with all due respect to Giannis and the Bucks, who were clearly the best team by record in the league before the world spun wildly out of control. But to me, it's the Philadelphia 76ers, Mina. Mm-hmm. It's the Sixers to me because they are a team that is built in ways that I don't love, to be quite honest. They have a lot of enormous dudes that don't really shoot that well. And that's not modern basketball. That is the antithesis of it. But when you match them up with the Bucks, not only do the Sixers have a talent advantage because they have Joel Embiid, because they have Ben Simmons, but those guys and the big bodies that they assembled that I otherwise dislike, say Al Horford, for instance, the reason they signed Al Horford, who drives me insane, is because he can guard Giannis. And I know Giannis just came back from this injury and he should be healthier too, but that matchup is so enticing to me. And then you add on top of that, the fact that Ben Simmons had been injured. He had a lower back injury that took him out of the regular season. But now, because of this layoff, he is going to be playing and healthy. Plus the fact, and this is where I cop to some element of delusion, Ben Simmons is posting photos of him shooting jumpers.
No.
Mina.
Don't do it. Don't fall for it. We've seen these before.
What happens if the NBA restart involves Ben Simmons draining threes? Just imagine that.
Simmons! Yes! He did it! Ben Simmons! Hold the Ben fan! Maybe now they'll finally leave him alone after that. He hits the three, his first in his NBA career.
Imagine that. It would be incredible. And I think it's honestly, he's had 4 months to work on this in private. Like, I sometimes see Ben Simmons as a combination of like my most disappointing child and also my favorite player. Then I believe the Sixers, with an easy schedule to start the restart, which they have, plus all of this chaos. Yeah, give me Philadelphia.
That take was the equivalent of you, Pablo, painting the hole on the side of the mountain. I just want you to know that.
I did it to myself. I always do.
All right. Well, on that rather inauspicious note, let's end that discussion. And after the break, we have got one more story for you guys, and it's about me.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. Starting in August, I will become the host of this very podcast, and I'll also be popping up throughout July, because my friend Mina, Mina, actually, do you just want to explain to your audience in your own words what exactly you'll be doing?
When you paused there, I thought you were checking to see if I was okay with you calling me your friend. I was like, Pablo, of course we're friends. We've known each other for years. I am transitioning to a new role at ESPN as a NFL analyst. I will be a regular on NFL Live every day. In addition to doing Around the Horn and Highly Questionable with you, Pablo, I'll be breaking down games, discussing the season, knock on wood, with Dan Orlovsky, Marcus Spears, Laura Rutledge, Keyshawn Johnson, and I honestly will just be doing what I love most in the world, which is thinking about football. I will also, I want to add, still be a part of this podcast, just not as the host. I'll be coming on as a guest to talk about football. And Pablo, I will be happy to fill in for you in relief if you go on vacation.
Please, I'm going to need that. I'm going to need that, not just because I will need a break, but because I have a 4-month-old and Violet is getting noisier. So yeah.
I hope we can hear sometimes on the podcast.
So Mina, your new title is NFL analyst, which is a big title, also one that's historically really been a male-dominated role, to say the least. So what does getting this new job mean to you?
It means everything. I mean, it is something I honestly never really thought was possible for me. And I, without being kind of too self-aggrandizing, I hope that me occupying the role maybe makes someone else think it might be possible for them. Functionally, Pablo, it means I get to watch even more football than I do already, which I did not think was possible. And it's probably unhealthy given how much football I already watch, but the opportunity to spend all of my waking hours studying the game, thinking about it, and then talking about something I'm so passionate about is an absolute blessing. I cannot wait to start. I'm just beyond excited because I truly, you know, from talking about football with me that I truly love this sport. I've always loved this sport, and getting to talk about what you love every day is an unbelievable gift.
Your love of football, by the way, is both completely sincere and also completely terrifying.
People always say they want to watch games with me, and I always give them many, many disclaimers because it can be a friendship ender. Honestly, it really can.
Yeah, you enter thinking you're going to watch a football game, and then you realize that you're actually there to watch you grind tape.
And grind my teeth and scream and throw things if the Seattle Seahawks are involved.
Well, actually, let's just trace the path here because you mentioned the Seahawks. Many years ago, your football commentary was the exclusive province of Seahawks message boards. So, like, what was your username? Tell me about your younger football hot-taking self.
I will never reveal that username. Please do not go look at my early internet football takes. They are very angry. They are very biased. I don't want to use the word unhinged, but, you know, that could be a fair approximation.
When anyone says the phrase, I don't want to use the word unhinged, you pretty much know that they are very far away from any semblance of a hinge.
I'll just say this. If you rooted for the San Francisco 49ers circa 2010 through 2013, please stay away from my internet presence around that time.
Mina, I have a question for you, though, out of self-interest. What advice do you have for me as I take over your show?
Well, I guess I'm going to go earnest here. Let your curiosity, I know you to be a deeply curious, interested person, be your guide in all things here. I mean, what I've loved so much about this podcast is that it's not just about highlights and scores and yesterday's news. And those are all things people definitely want to know, but there are things you can get a lot of places. I think what you get on this podcast that you don't get other places is the most interesting and essential stories. And sometimes that's topical. Like when Cam Newton goes to the Patriots and the NFL explodes, we're going to have on Bill Barnwell to break it down. But sometimes it's a story that people might not hear elsewhere. Like this weekend, we're bringing back one of my favorite stories, Ryan McGee, came on to talk about the real story of Rudy. It's a fabulous one. I think of one of my favorite all-time episodes on hockey dentists. There's just so many incredible stories like that. Kind of stories, Pablo, where you listen to them and then you immediately want to... There's no water cooler anymore because no one's going into an office. You immediately want to jump on a Zoom and tell your colleagues about this cool, incredible sports story or a sports story maybe that deepens your understanding of the games. So I know you, being a former journalist, will have a terrific eye for those stories naturally. And I'm so curious and excited to see the ones you pick, because I think they're going to be excellent. And I would also add, don't be afraid to use puns.
So you're saying that there are great expectations for a bit.
Oh, please keep subscribing after that, guys. Please. It's going to get better.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Mina, we'll talk to you tomorrow.